I'm Nora O'Donnell.
I'm John Dickerson.
Yep, he is. I'm Gail King, and this is a CBS This Morning podcast.
I'm Anthony Martinez, a CBS News podcast producer. Our guest today, Allison Green, has been called the Dear Abby of the work world. For the last 10 years, she's provided a workplace advice column, Ask a Manager. She's turned it into kind of a mini empire with a popular podcast and a best-selling book, Ask a Manager, How to Navigate Clueless Colleagues, Lunch-Stealing Bosses, and the Rest of Your Life at Work. Allison joins us now from outside of D.C. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
How did this workplace column get started?
So it was about a decade ago, and I was managing a nonprofit organization, and I kept seeing evidence that employees and job candidates would benefit so much from getting more of an understanding of how managers think. And there were a lot of career blogs out there, but I didn't see anyone giving advice from the perspective of a manager, someone who would say, okay, here's what your manager or your interviewer is thinking when you say X, or here's what they mean when they say Y. And I felt like that could be really helpful to people. What I discovered after doing it for a while is that I think there's a real hunger out there for help figuring out how to navigate interpersonal workplace issues, like a place to get really nuanced advice that's more than just your standard, how do I ask for a raise? I think my bread and butter has really become the stuff that's like, my boss is dating my dad, or my coworker won't stop hugging me. Those are real letters I've gotten. And I think that's the stuff people want advice on.
What were your expectations when you first started, and how have you seen the questions evolve over the last 10 years?
When I first started, I assumed I would be doing kind of what you think about when you think about standard work questions. So like, my boss is a micromanager, or how do I write a good cover letter? And I definitely do get those, but I get way more stuff about the sort of weird interpersonal issues that come up from having coworkers. So I get lots of stuff like, my coworker is playing music too loudly and won't turn it down, or my coworker told me that I smell and I don't know what to do. So just kind of the weird stuff that comes up from being thrown together with other people who aren't the ones we would have necessarily chosen to spend 40 hours a week with. As far as how things have changed, you know, when I started writing Ask a Manager, it was 2007. So a year later, we were plunged into recession, and my mail really showed that. I used to get a ton of letters from people who were in really desperate situations, especially people who graduated into the recession, who were really having trouble finding work in their field and were worried that they would never catch up. And indeed, I think that's been the case for a lot of people. The nice thing has been, in the last few years, my mail has changed. I still do get those letters. There are absolutely people out there who are still in very difficult situations, but I'm seeing less of that in my mail than I used to.
So let's take a dive into some of the letters that you've been sent. One topic that seems to be reoccurring, since most people spend a good amount of their time in the office, is love, or the lack thereof.
Yes.
What has surprised you the most? I'm just going to read a few. My coworker had an affair with a colleague's husband, and now he's treating her badly at work. My dad is dating my boss, and they want me to go to couples therapy with them. I mean, it seems like these would be something in a sitcom.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think if you look around at your life, you always see friends and maybe family members making questionable choices in their dating lives. And so from that perspective, it's no surprise that we see a lot of it at work as well. But yeah, that has really surprised me, how many sticky situations you get into at the intersection of work and romance.
Do you have any advice when it comes to coworkers dating, broaching that subject, if there's a colleague that you have that you perhaps want to pursue something? Is there a fine line to walk, especially given what's happening with the Me Too movement and workplace harassment, which is a serious issue?
Yeah, I think really in any case where you want to ask someone out, you want to be really attuned to signs that they're interested in and would welcome that. But especially at work, that goes doubly, maybe triply. You really, really have to pay attention to what cues you're getting. And I would not move forward unless you're getting pretty concrete signals of interest. And then if you do move forward, you really have to accept a no the first time, even a soft no, because it might come in the form of, oh, I'm busy that night, or, you know, oh, I've got other plans. You might be someone who thinks, well, that's not a no, that's a maybe. Maybe I can try again. But in a work situation, if you get anything other than a clear yes, you've pretty much got to assume it's a no.
So let's say that the person did say yes and the relationship is flourishing. How do you balance being in a relationship or being married with someone that you work with?
It's tricky. I think the litmus test that you want to strive for, your coworkers shouldn't be able to tell much about your relationship. But that doesn't mean you have to keep it a secret. But no PDA, no cuddling, no pet names for each other. And on the opposite side of that spectrum, no tension, too. You know, if you have an argument or if you break up, you can't bring that tension into the office and inflict it on your coworkers, because that's not fair to them.
Do you encourage one of the individuals to leave the workplace?
I don't think you need to. If you're in each other's chain of command, you absolutely cannot date within your chain of command. But if you're not, if neither of you has authority over the other, and it's not causing any work conflict of interest, you can make it work. You may find that you prefer in the long run to not be working in the same place. It can be a bit much to share both your home life and your work life, but there are a lot of people who make it work.
And let's say the relationship does go sour. So now you're working with an ex. How do you navigate that situation?
It's really hard. And I always tell people, before you enter into a workplace romance, think about how you will handle it if it does go badly and you're stuck seeing this person every day, maybe even sitting in close proximity to them every day. And think about, too, how the other person will handle it. It's really important that they be someone who you think will handle it maturely, because you don't want that kind of tension or weirdness injected into your work life. So, the best thing that you can do is to try to be really mature, try to leave it outside of work. Some people have a harder time with that than others, and some people do end up choosing to change jobs if that happens.
The other topic that can be a little thorny, and I see that you get a lot of letters about, is money. Talking about money can be difficult, even with your loved ones. How do you navigate talking about money with your peers at work? And then when you're talking to your manager, asking about a raise?
So many ways that this comes up at work. I think when people think about money and work, they think about salary. And certainly that is a huge thing. That's why we're all there. But it comes up in lots of other ways, too. You know, people who are pressured to make charitable contributions at work that they either don't want to or can't make. People who are pressured to contribute to endless baby showers and birthday celebrations. There's a lot of monetary demands just from having a job, which people can rightfully resent. In those cases, the best thing really is to be straightforward, you know, oh, I'd like to donate, but it's not in my budget. And respectful colleagues will respect that, and disrespectful ones may not. You just have to hold firm.
And when you find out that perhaps a colleague who has the same job or does the same amount of work as you do is making significantly more or significantly less than you, I mean, even finding out that information just among colleagues and peers, some people don't like to say how much they make. But when you're walking into your boss's office, it's kind of good to know, okay, what is this average salary for the field, but also the average salary in my company, in my division. How do you broach that subject with your colleagues to kind of do that research to kind of find out, okay, am I getting paid a fair amount compared to everyone else?
Yeah, it's really important to know, at a minimum, just as background information to inform your thinking about what the range might be for your position and where you fall along that range. You know, this is something where my advice has changed over the years. I used to say, if you found out that a coworker was making more than you, you can use it as background information, but it's not really something to bring up with your boss, because people make different amounts of money for all different reasons. Maybe someone negotiated better when they were hired. But these days, with how much attention has been paid to the gender wage gap, I do think it's something that you can bring up, especially if you think there might be a gender or a racial disparity that's in play. Even if you don't think it's intentional, if that has been the outcome, that is something that you can bring up pretty openly with your boss.
And when you do bring that up with your boss about a potential pay raise, do you have any tips on what to do or what not to do?
Yeah, if you are bringing it up in the context of having uncovered a pay disparity with someone who is doing the same type of work as you, at the same level, with the same amount of experience, I would come out and say, you know, I realize that we pay some people in this position X amount, and I'm curious to know why my salary isn't at that level and what I would need to do to get it there. If you're not bringing it up in the context of a disparity on your team, if you're just asking for a raise, the best thing that you can do is point to contributions that you've made since your salary was last set. So the whole idea with a raise is you are now contributing at a higher level than you were when your salary was last established. So let's talk about what that level is, show some evidence, and see if they're able to raise it. I will say with raises, people often think they have to present a whole complicated case, like maybe they have to walk in with a PowerPoint or something. And usually you don't. Usually it can be like five sentences, and that is often enough.
So let's move to the next thorny issue, which is politics. I think most people would agree, politics and religion, you probably shouldn't talk about at work. But in today's day and age, with these divisive times, it seems that politics is seeping more and more into everyday conversations. Any tips for handling that if you're on completely different political spectrums or perhaps not as tolerant to hear the other side?
Yeah, there is a weird thing just in humans in general, I think, on both sides of the aisle, where we tend to assume that whoever we're talking to will share our views and thus welcome hearing them. And it is not always the case, especially at work. So I would say steer clear of politics in general. But if someone is talking politics at you or around you and you don't want to be subjected to it, it's completely fine to say, you know, I'm so tired of hearing about politics. That's certainly true for most of us today. Can we talk about something else? Or even if it goes too far, you can even say, you know, hey, I don't necessarily agree with you, and it's not a conversation I want to have at work.
One of the key principles you emphasize is how you speak up is key. What do you mean by that?
Yes. So first of all, most people don't speak up enough at work when they should. They stay quiet because they worry that it will cause tension, or they'll say the wrong thing, or it will just make things awkward, or it'll be adversarial. And so they stay quiet about things that have pretty significant impacts on them at work when they could be speaking up. But the thing about speaking up is that you have to do it right. You can't come in too aggressively, or you will make it into a big deal. And you also can't come in too passively, or you may get run right over. You just have to be matter-of-fact and calm and straightforward. And really, the tone that you want is the same tone that you would use to raise any other work problem. Like, if you think about the tone that you would use to say, hey, this software isn't working right, how do we fix this? That's the same tone you want for most interpersonal problems, too.
When you became a hiring manager, a chief of staff, and you started looking at applicants, was there something you saw that you were like, I made that mistake?
Yes, a lot of them, actually. But I'll give you the biggest one that I think is the most common, and that is feeling like you are just there to be assessed by your interviewer, and you're just waiting for them to pass judgment on you. And that is certainly a big part of the process, but it's overlooking the other half of the process, which is that you are there to figure out if this is a job that you want and that you think you would enjoy and be good at in this particular organization, and if you want to work for this particular manager. And so many job candidates go into interviews ignoring that piece of it. So the interview becomes this one-way street, and they're not doing their own evaluation right back. And that is bad for a couple of reasons. One, it means that you're not actually equipping yourself to make a good decision about whether this is a job you should accept if it's offered to you. But also, it will change the way you come across in the interview. It's, as a hiring manager, I can tell you, it's much more attractive and appealing when I can tell that a candidate is rigorously thinking about whether this is the right fit for them.
You also get a lot of questions about quitting, including, how do I quit my job without burning bridges? What's the right amount of time to give an employer? What advice do you have for individuals who may be listening who are thinking about quitting their jobs?
You know, people have so much anxiety around quitting, and so often they worry that it will be almost like a personal betrayal of their employer. And it's not. It's business. And you get to make the decisions that are right for you in your career. You know, if you decide that you're ready to move on, the best thing that you can do is to just be straightforward, give a reasonable amount of notice. And in most fields, that 2 weeks. In some fields, it might be a little bit more. And do what you can to make the transition a smooth one. But it is a normal part of doing business. Any manager who's been managing for more than a couple of years will understand that. And people don't need to worry about it as much as they usually do.
For someone just entering the workforce, what should they know? What landmines should they avoid? What are some common mistakes that usually trip people up?
One thing I think is that you really want to pay attention to the culture around you, like really observe just how people operate within that office, because this is something that you won't know until you get there, and it's definitely not something they teach you in school, but you really want to observe the culture. You know, is everyone precisely on time for meetings? Would it be unheard of to walk into your boss's office without a pen and paper to take notes? Would it be considered really rude to take a call on speakerphone? These are little things, but together they all add up to culture, and they all add up to whether or not you're going to feel like, and if other people will feel like, you fit in on that team. So I think as a new worker, you really just want to look around you and observe. And another one I think too, actually, it's on a similar theme, is to be careful about rushing into office politics. You know, you might meet people very early on in your job who have a very distinct point of view about how things in that office work. And they might be right, but they might not be right. And you want to be careful about aligning yourself right off the bat with the first person who grabs your ear.
What is the most outlandish, ridiculous, a question you receive that you would just like, oh my God?
I have had a lot. One of my favorite weird questions over the years was a few years ago, someone had written in because her employee was telling her coworkers that she was casting magical curses on them. And the coworkers, two of them had happened to get pretty sick soon after that. And so they believed this, that they were being cursed, and they were freaked out. And the manager wrote into me asking, what on earth do I do about this? This is not something they train you to handle. so that one was fun. You know, the answer there really is, take away the magic element of it. You can't have an employee threatening other employees, no matter what the threat is. And that's the way to come at it.
Approach it logically.
Yep.
When you hit reply all and you perhaps are sharing something that you didn't want everyone to read and you can't take the email back, how do you keep your head up high while walking through the office?
Oh, I think we have all done that at one point or another. I think if you said something in there that was mean-spirited, go and apologize to the person that it was about. Don't bury your head in the sand and hope it just goes away. It won't. Go and do the mature thing and say, hey, I shouldn't have put that in an email. I'm mortified and I really apologize. If it was something that touched on a real frustration that you have, and that's often the case with these reply all accidents, it might be that this is the nudge to force you to actually act on that. You know, so maybe you're saying, hey, I'm mortified. I'm so sorry about that email. You know, the truth is I am frustrated about issue X, and I should have talked to you about it directly.
How do you handle when you have a boss who may be younger than you, may have less experience than you, or you feel just isn't up to the task, but has gotten the job from playing politics or because they're well connected or for another reason?
Age is weird. I think we all have weird hangups about age, especially early in our career. I think people, there's like a natural awkwardness around it, but especially if you're seeing that the person doesn't have the skills there, it can be a really frustrating situation to be in. The best thing that you can do is to try to find a way to really put yourself on that person's side if you can. You know, help them do their job, offer expertise that you think will be useful, paying attention, of course, to their cues about whether or not they want that. If you try that and it's just not going well, I mean, if the person is just incompetent, for example, that's a different situation, and you'd have to handle that just like you would any boss who is incompetent. But I think to begin with, try to sort of set your skepticism aside and see if you can make it work, because sometimes you might be surprised.
And how do you make it work when you have a coworker who isn't carrying their weight?
Step one, if you can, is to talk to them and tell them what you need. You know, hey, when you haven't been giving me X, Y, and Z quickly enough and I'm missing my own deadlines, what do we need to do to change the system that we're using so that I'm getting it on time? If that doesn't work and the problem continues, at that point, you've really got to escalate it and talk to your boss. And this isn't like a tattling thing. I think people sometimes worry about this idea of tattling on a coworker. Tattling isn't really a thing now that we're adults, but people do still worry about it. You're talking to your boss about a work problem. You're not trying to get anyone in trouble. That's not the point here. You're saying, hey, there is this work problem. How do we solve it?
But what if you have a boss or an employer who just doesn't terminate bad employees? They just keep them around, kind of pushes them to the side and out of sight, out of mind kind of mentality.
In that case, you have a boss problem more than you have the coworker problem. You do still have the coworker problem, but the person who is supposed to be solving it, your boss, isn't doing their job. There is not a lot that you can do in that situation. You may need to accept that this is who you're working for and decide if you still want to stay in the job long term, knowing that's part of it. There are some exceptions to that. I mean, if you happen to have really great rapport with someone who's over their head, like your boss's boss, who has a track record of being open to feedback and handling situations like that well, in some limited circumstances, there are ways to discreetly talk to that person, but it can be a risky thing to do. There are a lot of bad bosses out there who operate in the way that you just described, and it's really frustrating to work for them. And sometimes all you can do is just accept that is part of the job.
Any advice if you're in that situation to keep morale up, or any other workplace where perhaps you're feeling a little low, not enthusiastic, but you still need that paycheck at the end of the week, you still have to provide for a family, and you know that the job hunt isn't so easy?
I think it helps to get really clear in your own mind about why you are choosing to be there. You know, maybe you don't love the work or you don't love your boss, but you're paid very well for your field, or maybe you have a 5-minute commute, or maybe you know that if you put in 2 years there, it'll be so good for your resume that it'll open a ton of doors for you professionally later on. Whatever it is, there's a reason that you're choosing to be there, even if that reason is just, I couldn't find another job. And I think if you keep that in the forefront of your mind, it helps you feel more agency in the situation. You feel like you have more control, and you're clearer on what it is that you're getting out of staying.
Look at the glass half full. Last but not least, many people thought that once they left college, they would no longer have roommates or have to share a common space. But more and more offices have their open floor plan, and people have to share a desk or have someone right next to them. How do you manage that if you're sitting next to or across to someone who perhaps plays music loudly or can be annoying or you're just not getting along with?
Headphones. That only works some of the time, though. Yeah, open office plans are horrible for a ton of people. I think the majority of people. They're distracting. They make it hard to focus. They're not great. There is a small minority of people who like them, but if your coworker is doing something that is objectively annoying, you know, playing music too loudly when they could be using headphones or taking all their calls on speakerphones or humming loudly, that kind of thing, it's okay to say, you know, hey, I'm having trouble focusing. Do you think you could use headphones, or do you think you could not use speakerphone for that? You know, you've got to just be straightforward. That is the only way that shared space like that works. But there is a certain level of noise and distraction in an open office space that you're not going to be able to do anything about. It's just built into that plan. And in that case, use headphones if you can. If you can't, see if there's a conference room that you can use when you really need to focus. But yeah, they're tough setups.
Allison Green, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Once again, the book is Ask a Manager How to Navigate Clueless Colleagues, Lunch-Stealing Bosses, and the Rest of Your Life at Work. It's a practical guide to over 200 difficult professional conversations. Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. You can watch the full CBS This Morning broadcast Monday through Saturday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on your local CBS station.
Or you can stream it live on the CBS All Access app.